DW Africa Link.
A very warm welcome to DW's Africa Link, coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And I am Assumpta Latos, and I'm very happy to have you, Zipporah, for the first time today. We are also live on Facebook, and please don't forget to leave our comments.
Coming up, armed separatists kidnap 79 students in the restive Anglophone regions in Cameroon.
As we speak, there's confusion. Military helicopters have been hovering the air all over Nkwen. They're certainly looking out where the possible hideout of these Ambazonian kidnappers and the students.
Labor unions in Nigeria insist they will go ahead with a nationwide strike after negotiation talks hit a snag.
It's just going to be a shutdown for this country, and that might not be too good for this country. The consequences are too great to bear for the government.
So we have these and much more coming up. Before that, let's hear other news that's been making headlines around the world.
DW News.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. A Cameroon government source said Monday that armed separatists have kidnapped 79 school children in an English-speaking Northwest region. The governor of the Northwest region said the school's principal, driver, and staff members were also abducted. Meanwhile, opposition party members say Cameroonian police have arrested 38 supporters of opposition leader Maurice Kamto, who claimed widespread fraud after losing last month's presidential election against longtime leader President Paul Biya, who has ruled since 1982. Separatists have been fighting for independence against Biya's French-speaking government over the past year. Hundreds have been killed. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani said the Islamic Republic would proudly bypass crippling U.S. economic sanctions hours after the U.S. reimposed sanctions on Iran's oil, banking and transportation sectors. Speaking in the capital, Tehran, Rouhani blasted U.S. President Trump and his decision to withdraw from the 2015 international nuclear deal, saying Iran would not yield to U.S. pressure.
We are in a situation of economic war, confronting a bullying power. Before, it was Saddam Hussein. Today, it is Donald Trump. There is no difference. We must resist and win.
Iran said it would continue to sell oil despite the sanctions. Elsewhere, a Danish woman has been arrested in South Africa for allegedly stealing 17 million euros in a social security scam meant for disadvantaged people in Denmark. Danish prosecutors have requested a South African court to expedite the 64-year-old to Denmark so that she could face charges of corruption. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. German Chancellor Angela Merkel stressed Monday that her center-right Christian Democratic Union Party would continue working with the center-left Social Democrats and her conservative Bavarian allies, the Christian Social Union Party, despite plummeting support for all three. Speaking in the capital, Berlin, Merkel said the coalition would find solutions.
The question is whether we as the CDU continue to feel committed to the coalition treaty. We discussed this at the party's federal board meeting yesterday, and there was unanimous agreement. In any case, nobody objected to it. This means there is a general conviction that, on the basis of the coalition treaty, we will continue to lead the government.
Also in Germany, federal police have searched the homes of suspected human traffickers and document counterfeiters in three German states. Seven people are suspected of trafficking Iraqis and Syrians into the country by using fake documents. Investigations are still ongoing. And finally, a new UN report found that the Earth's protective ozone layer is healing, decades after an international treaty banned ozone-depleting chemicals. The report found that the ozone, which protects us from cancerous ultraviolet rays, could be completely repaired in the North and Southern hemispheres by the mid-century. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
And you are listening to Africa Link with me, Assumpta Latus.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. A warm welcome to all of you listening to us on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Goodness, Elsa, they are giving us a thumbs up. Induaka Gwendo. And there is Emmanuel Belayondo, live from Buea, Cameroon. And then there is Edward Richards. Very many of you. Thank you very much. Join in the conversation and tell us what you think of the stories that we are covering today.
And we start off in Cameroon. Armed separatists have kidnapped at least 78 students and their principal from a Presbyterian school in Gwe village in the northwest region of Bamenda.
The kidnappings late Sunday took place near Bamenda, the capital of the troubled English-speaking region, according to Governor Deben Chofo. Our correspondent in that region, Gongzong Jean-Marie, has been following the incident and gives us the latest.
The news of kids of Presbyterian school, secondary school in Kwen broke out this morning. It has come at a time they have not actually given a signal as they usually do. So it has taken the whole Bamenda by storm this afternoon. As we speak, there's confusion, and the video of some 11 boys have already emerged, and the parents are in total shock.
Yeah, and I have just seen that video now, which is on the social media, of the separatists calling themselves Amber Boys. But the question is, why do you think they would go for kids this time, or rather high school students?
They have been arguing, pressurizing people on social media that the thousands and thousands of southern Cameroonians who have fled to Nigeria, some who are taking refuge in bushes, are not having access to education. And they are arguing that the few that are in town should not also go to school because others are not going.
And what are the authorities saying about it, or rather, what are they doing about this situation?
So far, the authorities have been promising the population tighter security measures, but we keep seeing these incidences repeating itself from one institution to the other and from one locality to the other. As we speak this afternoon, military helicopters have been hovering the air all over Nkwen. Many people have been interpreting that they're certainly looking out where the possible hideout of these Ambazonian kidnappers and the students.
Do you think the kidnappings are coincidental, coming a day before President Paul Biya is sworn in as president after the controversial elections?
Yes, I think that popular opinion in Bamenda has been very rife that the separatists seems to be sending out a message to the Yaounde regime and to the international community that as President Paul Biya is sworn in tomorrow for the seventh time as the president of the country, that there is still no peace in the Anglophone regions. That's what people have been saying. And I think that to have actually planned and executed this, because so far this is the biggest kidnaps since the struggle started. So this seems to be communicating a message to Yaounde and to the international community.
Gongsong Jean-Marie there speaking, and we are having lots of comments here. And I have one from Niamba who says, it's the new tactics employed by Biya's slaves to call Cameroonian soldiers. They were doing this to gain sympathy from the international community that is taking note of Biya's brutality and genocide in the southern Cameroon.
Yeah, Fernando Dos Santos seems to agree with that and says the government is behind this kidnapping. He said Ambazonia fighters cannot afford to feed and accommodate this number of people. So lots of accusations and counter-accusations.
And comments, yes. And we'll be reading those comments then later on. But now, journalist groups still in Cameroon, journalist groups and NGOs are calling for the immediate release of five journalists arrested within a month and locked up by the military.
They also want sensationalist charges on Mimi Mefo, a popular TV host, to be dropped. Moki Kinzeka reports from Yaounde.
The journalists who have been detained for several weeks now include Michelle Biem Tong, known by Cameroonians for being highly critical of exactions, Gustave Robert Kenyi, publisher of Orientation Hebdo, a reporter on human rights abuses, and Joseph Olinga of Le Jour, a newspaper writer. Another one is Mimi Mefo, popular TV host and head of English news department for the privately owned Equinox television and radio station, who was summoned this morning to appear before a state council in Douala. She believes her case has to do with her reporting of crisis in Cameroon's restive English-speaking regions.
I contacted my lawyer, Barrister Tamfo Richard, who told me that an investigation has actually been opened against me on propagation of false information and cyber criminality. The problem here actually are my reports, my debates, my social media reports, and my day-to-day, minute-by-minute updates on my website and social media on political and social happenings in Cameroon.
Chaline Ditche is president of the Union of Cameroon Journalists. He says it is unfortunate that Cameroon continues to persecute journalists who are only exercising their functions.
Journalists have a right to receive information, any information. They are wrong, and it is intimidating. The government is just deceiving the world into thinking that there is a press freedom in Cameroon.
But Cameroon's communication minister, Issa Chiruma, says journalists are not above the law and they should be tried when they go wrong.
As far as the battle against the terrorism is concerned, whoever respects the law will live at peace in our nation. What is unacceptable is the fact that the journalists would like the international community to exert influence on President Biya to get the journalists released.
The Union of Journalists says arrests and threats have intensified during the presidential election period.
Moke Kinzeka reporting from Yaounde. And now in Nigeria, Labour Congress has refused to enter into a negotiation with the government on a new minimum wage for workers. Talks to avert general and indefinite strike by workers, which is planned for tomorrow, collapsed last night.
During the talks, the government proposed 50 euros as a minimum wage. However, the Labour Congress wants workers to get about 72 euros as a minimum pay.
To know more about the impact of the strike, now we spoke to our correspondent in Abuja, Ben Adam Shemang.
It's a great toll on the side of the Nigerian worker because cost of transportation will go very, very high. Sometimes they go three times, four times higher. The banks will be shut down definitely. And the oil sector, talking of the fuel attendants, petrol stations will also close. Banking sector, hospitals will be affected because workers will also go on strike. And as we are talking to, aviation workers are joining. So it's just going to be a shutdown for this country, and that might not be too good for this country. The consequences are too great to bear for the government. More so, this is a government that is also, in the next 3 months or so, will be conducting presidential elections.
What do you think should be done, or what can the government do to avert these consequences?
Well, government is saying that about 72 euros too high. But Labour is also saying 50 is too low. So it means that Labour can go up and government comes down a bit. I mean, Labour goes up still, government comes down a bit. Outside that, I foresee that it's going to be, if to be total. Government is still also arguing that there are also some states that cannot generate enough funds to even pay their workers. Therefore, to make it 72 euros per worker as the least paid is going to be a very great, great, great problem for the economy. But there has to be negotiation. There has to be a way out. Round the table, it has to be. Because last night, the government did what could be described as a monologue. They just discussed among themselves without labor.
What do Nigerians say about this?
Ordinary citizens in the streets in Nigeria are simply feeling that government ought to do the needful. Government should pay workers appropriately because the market does not want to know where you're working. The market does not want to know the size of your pocket money-wise. And of course, in Africa, you're talking of dependence. Once you have a worker, not just his direct family, there are also dependents, extended family system. So one person is busy taking care of about 10 people.
Yeah, that was Ben Adam Shengamang speaking to me earlier today from Abuja. Now, going back to our top story today, I still have one comment here, and I think that we won't have much time for it. Nguasu Scott says this is sabotage to the Amazonians people by the military. It is the work of IRC.
And Gungafo actually says Biya did not win that election convincingly. The whole process lacked credibility, talking about the elections. You can also join in the debate on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Welcome back to the program with me, Assumpta Lattus.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. I don't need to say, because I can see many of you are listening to us on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Prosperity J writing about Paul Biya there. And there is Mba Umbutu Okwen also talking, saying that he hopes this will not be another Transparency International. So many of our listeners from Cameroon and Nigeria there, thank you for your comments.
And coming up in the next 15 minutes, Uganda has started its first vaccination against the deadly Ebola virus.
The vaccine is targeting only frontline health workers who are highest at risk of contracting Ebola virus disease, and it is not available to the general public.
We will also be hearing the latest on the sports world. But first, let's head to Ghana. And as most of us know, world leaders just wrapped up the 18th International Anti-Corruption Conference in Copenhagen, which also discussed steps towards realizing the UN Sustainable Development Goals. Meanwhile, this has come up and brought about the initiative in Ghana, which is hoping to help raise the next generation of honest citizens by delivering their message at schools.
They hope to instill values such as truth and integrity, which they say the country needs in order to end corruption. The initiative is called Integrity Clubs and is run by Ghanaian's Commission on Human Rights and Administrative Justice. Maxwell Sook has this report.
Children at the Central Zaria Primary School in Tamale sit with rapt attention as Adam Barney, an anti-corruption officer at Ghana's Commission on Human Rights and Administrative Justice, takes them through some core values of life. Through this, Barney believes the children will live by ethics and principles that will make them incorruptible citizens.
Integrity is being honest, being sincere, making your yes to be yes and your no to be no. But if you are a child and you take interest in doing bad things, you take interest in copying, you are lazy, you grow up to be an irresponsible adult.
Ghana scored 40 out of 100 in the latest Corruption Perception Index compiled by Transparency International. The lower the score, the more corrupt the country is. But recent corruption scandals suggest corruption in Ghana goes deeper than many people think. Adam Barney thinks the main problem is that people lack integrity. This is why the Commission has adopted the Integrity Clubs initiative, which moves from school to school to preach its message as part of the first step towards raising an honest and responsible generation of Ghanaians. At the end of the presentation, the children seemed impressed.
Today we have seen and understand how, when you are doing bad things, how it will end you.
Corruption is when you are in your office and you are spending money, and the money is not yours. You are doing corruption. There are many, many people who are doing that.
From today, I'll report people who is corrupt.
Far away from Africa, world leaders just ended the 18th International Anti-Corruption Conference in Copenhagen, Denmark, where they adopted an ambitious 26-point new joint statement. Combating corruption is the shared responsibility of both developing and developed countries. Back in Tamale, teacher Mohammed Kamil says he also benefited from the presentation.
I feel corruption in myself. What I mean is, corruption is affecting me. He mentioned bribe. We bribe before our things are done. We do bribe. It's just bad. If we had also had that education before, in fact, we wouldn't have lived this way. We would have been different in terms of our relation with our country, our work, our behavior in general.
Ghana's anti-corruption campaigners say the country loses approximately $3 billion annually to corruption, representing about 300% of all the aid which it receives in the same time period. Hopefully, these baby steps in Tamale will help children develop essential values, and this could one day help fight corruption in Ghana.
Our correspondent there, Maxwell Sook, reporting from Tamale, Ghana.
Health check.
We now head to Uganda. The country has for the first time started vaccination against the deadly Ebola virus. The move is supposed to act as a preventive measure against the disease that has ravaged neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo.
The vaccine will only be given to healthcare and frontline workers in the 5 high-risk border districts who are prone to infection with the virus. This comes at a time when Uganda is continuing vigilance to stop any possible Ebola cases from DRC, where the disease has killed nearly 200 people. Alex Jita has more details from Uganda.
At least 3,000 health workers will be vaccinated, marking the first time it is used in a country not in the midst of an active Ebola outbreak. Most health workers have died in the course of duty. Among them is Dr. Matthew Lukweya, who died years ago while treating his patient and was today named as a hero. Ebola can spread rapidly through contact with small amounts of bodily fluid.
The affected areas in DRC are about 100 kilometers from Uganda's border.
Uganda's Health Minister Ruth Ocheng told DW that the vaccine is currently only available to those few health workers in hospitals receiving suspected cases at the Uganda-DRC border.
The vaccine is targeting only frontline health workers who are highest at risk of contracting Ebola virus disease, and it is not available to the general public. And by frontline care health workers, we mean those health workers that are currently working in the health facilities that receive the highest numbers of populations that are crossing to and from the Democratic Republic of Congo into Uganda.
An outbreak of Ebola in the DRC has claimed 180 lives so far. The affected areas are only 100 kilometers from northwestern Uganda. The Assistant Director of Health Services in Arua region, Manasi Anziko, says they will also take other measures apart from vaccinations in order to curb its spread.
We have been able to train some health workers who have been trained in Ebola response. We have that team which is the task force which is active, and every time we meet and see how we can always be ready. One of them is the training of health workers ready. Then at the border points, with the help of other government agencies like Immigration Department, we also screen travelers.
More than 25,000 people have received an experimental vaccine in the DRC since August. The WHO insists the vaccine is safe despite being on trial. The Uganda Medical Association have raised concerns because it is still under research. Here is their chairman, Dr. Sam Eboko.
We are acutely aware that the vaccine is still under research and used only in a restricted fashion in what is called compassionate use. People who are highly at risk of acquiring the disease, for example, the health workers have lost their lives because of this Ebola, and therefore it is very important that the ministry has taken this step to vaccinate those who are highly at risk.
It is not clear when the vaccine will be available to the general public, as it is currently very expensive. Although the investigational vaccine has not yet been licensed, it was used in previous Ebola outbreaks in Guinea, Sierra Leone, and DR Congo at the recommendation of the WHO's group of experts.
Alex Jita reporting.
Africa Link. Sport.
Yes, it's sport, as you have heard. And Zippy, when was the last time that you watched football or anything of sport?
I do watch sports a lot, Assumpta, especially because my favorite team, I don't want to mention it here, but I am a sports fan.
Okay, so let's hear what is happening in the world of sports. And we start off with the football action.
Yeah, and as you know, the Africa CAF, or rather Confederation of African Champions League, first leg football final between Egyptian team Al Ahly and Tunisian champions Esperance was marred by controversy in a breathtaking final at Alexandria in Egypt. Our sports correspondent Samson Omale has more on this.
The CAF Champions League final lived up to its billing as both a tough and a thrilling match. It was the first time video assistant referees VAR was used in the championship. There were three penalties on the night, including two controversial ones, which went to the Egyptian as Al Ahly sealed a 3-1 win that certainly didn't go down well with the travelling contingent. Football fans have been reflecting on the results from the weekend's game. Listen to what they have to say.
Al Ahly of Egypt took a crucial advantage going into the second leg of the CAF Champions League final after defeating Esperance of Tunisia by 3-1. Al Ahly were the favourites going into the competition. So going into the second leg, you get the feeling that the old sway.
The team I describe as the Barcelona of Africa, because in terms of performance so far in the continent, and looking at their 3-1 first leg advantage, when you watch their game, they tend to be stronger when they are even away from home most of the time.
And a very good one from CAF for introducing the VAR, because if not for VAR, maybe the result of the match would have been different.
In women's football, defending champions Nigeria Super Falcons are determined to win their title when the 11th edition of the 2018 African Women Cup of Nations kicks off from the 17th of November in Ghana. Ngozi Okobi, a member of the Super Falcons team, says winning the African Women title for a record 9th time will be a delight.
Well, it's going to be a tough competition because Africa as a continent, football, has actually gone beyond what it was 2-3 years ago. So it's going to be competitive, but no panic for the Super Falcons.
Meanwhile, Bundesliga fans are upbeat after Borussia Dortmund extended its lead at the top of the table standings. Dortmund beat Wolfsburg 1-0 over the weekend thanks to Marco Reus' goal. They are now 4 points ahead of Borussia Mönchengladbach and defending champions Bayern Munich. Bayern Munich settled for a 1-1 draw with Feyenoord. In athletics news, it was another great performance from African representatives at this year's New York Marathon. Athletes from Ethiopia and Kenya dominated the race to win the men and women titles. Mary Kitiani of Kenya became the second woman to win the New York Marathon 4 times. Kitiani beat fellow Kenyan Vivian Cheruiyot to victory by 3 minutes. Last year's winner, American Charlene Flagan, was third. Kitiani ran the race in 2 hours, 22 minutes and 48 seconds, the second fastest time for the course in history. Margaret Okayo of Kenya holds the record of 2 hours, 22 minutes, 31 seconds, which was set in 2003. The victory was Kitiani's 4th in New York in the last 5 years.
I'm really happy for winning today again for the 4th time. I know last year was 2nd and I did not give up.
The men's marathon was won by Lilisa Disisa of Ethiopia. Disisa clocked 2 hours, 5 minutes, 59 seconds to win the race. His time was the second fastest ever recorded in New York.
I participate, number 2, number 3, and one time I DNF. This year, I decided to champion because I did hard training, everything control. I saved my power. And I saw athletes, especially my partner training athlete, Shuragi Tata. I amazing him.
That is Alenisa Desisa of Ethiopia, who just won the New York Marathon. And now going back to our top story, of course, it's about Cameroon. And you know what's happened there today? 79 children were kidnapped and you also have arrests.
And the principal as well, right? Yeah, that was, it's not really good news. And we have lots of comments going on. People from Cameroon and from different parts of the continent trying to say exactly what they think about the story.
Yeah, for sure. And I'll go with the first comment here from El Haji Ahmed, who says that they are ongoing curfews in the set areas, and he's actually accusing the Cameroon military, as he says, of kidnapping the people. He says the speaker in the video could neither speak English nor Pidgin.
And Angry Kibihi says, Amba boys do not kidnap children. Paul Bia and his agent has no regards for human lives. That's your opinion. And it all staged play by Paul Bia and his regime. This is what he says. Angry Kibihi. Yeah.
And Dimenu Oscar is saying, thank you, DW. You have seen the discrimination of this Francophone government. And he says that if this was in Anglophone region, they could not have reported on the matter. So thank you very much for your comments. And keep the debate going on our Facebook page, DW Africa. I'm Zipporah Nyambura.
And I'm Assumpta Latus.
Bye
thank
for
you for
now.
Listening.
for minds.